And welcome to Monday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live here on Giants.com. So glad you could join us. Alongside Adina Marks, I'm Lance Meadow. With you for the next 60 minutes as we'll be breaking down all that is happening with respect to the New York Giants. Another OTA taking place as we speak. They will have some media availability a little bit later on. Ben McAdoo, a few players will be made available. We will keep you up to date with any news breaking items from that. We also want to remind you, Big Blue Kickoff Live is brought to you by DraftKings, daily fantasy sports destination. At DraftKings, you can play as often as you want with no season-long commitment. Go to DraftKings.com, enter promo code CONTACT to play for free today. DraftKings Fantasy Sports, free to play. Today, we want to take a look at some articles that were written in terms of breaking down some of the rosters across the NFL landscape, specifically the Giants roster, of course, and then we will expand upon that. We'll also take you through some of the observations from today's OTAs, and we'll get to your phone calls at 201-939-4513, hashtag Giants chat as well. First, let's start with OTAs, Anita, and then we'll get into the NFL.com and ESPN.com articles recently that were published with respect to the Giants roster. Today, you had, once again, a continuation of the secondary players being rotated in and out. That's not necessarily a surprise. Last week, we saw, obviously, Michael Thompson get some reps alongside Landon Collins. Darian Thompson has been utilized, and everybody else, they've been sort of like moving in and out just to get a better gauge of, you know, who may be an ideal fit next to Landon Collins.
Absolutely, but today, Darian Thompson yet again started opposite Landon Collins. There was a tip pass by Odell Beckham Jr. He came down with the interception. This is a young man who is impressing a number of people, media, coaches, you name it. So that's really exciting. And then on top of that, Sterling Shepard made a phenomenal reaching grab today at practice. So, you know, I find it very interesting. You know, once Eli Apple was drafted, there was a lot of talk, is he going to start? You draft a player in the top 10, is he going to start? Right now, it looks like Wade is up on him in that slot corner position. We know that Jenkins and DRC will start at both corner positions. So there is very well a chance that Eli Apple might not start regular season game one. Obviously, he's going to be utilized. How many plays a game will he get? Only time will tell. But I'll tell you what, right now, the way it's looking, Sterling Shepard and Darian Thompson, a second and third round pick for the Giants, Lance, just might start for the Giants come regular season game one against the Dallas Cowboys. Again, it's early. It's OTAs. We haven't even gotten to training camp yet. But if you really want to look into the writing on the wall, I think Giants fans should be really excited about the second and third round pick for this Giants organization.
Well, if you could get the top three picks in your draft class to contribute, you know, starting versus coming off the bench or being rotated in, I don't know if there's necessarily a huge difference between that, but contributions, that's key. And certainly those two that you named have made a name for themselves in OTAs. Eli Apple has certainly stood out too. And remember, starters for corners is all dependent on how the opposition lines up to start the game. For example, if they're going to go with three wide receivers or so forth, you may throw out your additional corner. If they don't, you're going to only have two corners to start the game. So a lot of that is dependent on who lines up opposite you. That's why I never get too caught up in terms of cornerbacks who start, because all that is who lines up to start the game, not necessarily who plays the most reps and so forth.
Well, that's why
I
said, I mean, the number of snaps that he'll eventually play, and of course, is that something that could obviously grow and develop as the season progresses? Of course, then you have concern about health issues, and God willing, of course, that both the starting corners stay healthy. I mean, listen, only times will tell. But the point that I wanted to make is that there was so much emphasis in regard to Eli Apple, will he be a starter? Giants draft him in the top 10. Listen, there's a chance that your second and third round pick might be starters on this team heading into regular season game one. So, you know, my point is don't focus so much on Eli Apple. The top three picks are definitely turning heads and making noise here at OTAs, and I think it's something that very positive that Giants fans can be happy about.
Well, and if you look across the NFL landscape, it's the teams that get contributions from top to bottom. It's not so much the top three picks. I'd say even beyond that, you know, you want to see Paul Perkins, you want to see Jarrell Adams, you want to see B.J. Goodson. If it's on special teams, if it's as a defensive player, it makes no difference. You want to see everybody contribute. That's the sign of a good draft class, and, you know, that's how you show your depth. You can't necessarily rely on depth coming from free agency. It has to come from the draft as well. So that's certainly a positive with respect to what we've seen so far out of OTAs. The other player who wasn't drafted, is an undrafted free agent, who actually made a nice play today, was Dante Dion. out of Boise State, who was a college teammate of Darian Thompson. He made a pick six off Ryan Nassib earlier today. So even some of the undrafted guys, the unknowns, are making a name for themselves too, which is not necessarily a surprise given the Giants' track record. 201-939-4513 is the telephone number, hashtag Giants Chat. In addition to what's happening with respect to OTAs, we also wanted to open up the conversation with respect to a few articles that have been written recently where they're starting to, you know, look at the NFL as a whole, where teams have improved and so forth. NFL.com recently ranked its top 10 rosters in terms of overall talent. Now, this doesn't necessarily take into consideration any of the rookies because they don't know how the rookies are going to be utilized, but they did break down all of the returning players, and this article was written by Bucky Brooks for NFL.com, and to me, the ranking is not so much important. I always take away how they broke down the roster and what they see in the roster. And, you know, he defines blue chip players as players that are certainly game-changing players and players that have a very strong track record. So he named as the Giants' blue chip players Eli Manning, Odell Beckham, Damon Harrison, JPP, Olivier Vernon, DRC, and Janoris Jenkins. Those were his blue chip players. And then he has risers that he has labeled. And for the Giants, he selected Weston Richburg as his riser, a player that has shown some upside and he thinks is going to eventually take the next step to really make a statement. So that is interesting. And Richburg's name's been thrown around a lot. And offensive linemen, I would always say, if there's nothing flashy about that player, they probably don't get a lot of recognition. But, you know, Richburg, since he's come aboard, started off at left guard, moved to center. You know, you want to see him become the vocal member, I think, of this offensive line. I think it goes beyond the X's and O's. If Richburg can emerge as a guy who demands the respect of his teammates and brings this offensive line together, you know, that's another reason why you label him as a riser.
And I will say this, I have seen that development from him. I have seen him become a lot more comfortable around the facility. I've seen him become a lot more talkative, a lot more social, a lot more open. I see the way that he kind of his personality in the locker room. So I think you're absolutely right, Lance. And you know, from the first day that he walked in here and I had the opportunity to meet him to now, I've seen that growth and I've seen that development.
So he's a riser. We'd be curious to hear what you have to think in terms of other risers or players that you'd label as risers on this team. It could be anybody. I mean, other than obviously a rookie, because a rookie hasn't played yet, but it could be a second-year player all the way on. You know, who else deserves that label as a riser on this team? Weston Richburg is who NFL.com has focused on. And then blue-chip players, I threw out a number of the guys that the Giants were labeled as under NFL.com's umbrella, but, you know, you may have somebody else that you would throw into the category of a blue chip player. So we certainly want to hear from you. Now, ESPN.com also ranked the rosters and broke that down. They didn't necessarily have the Giants ranked as high as NFL.com.
Yeah, I find this really interesting, and this is kind of why I wanted to share it on the show, and I'd love to hear from some of our viewers out there, because this doesn't sit well with me, and so I'm curious if it sits well with you. I would imagine not. So NFL.com, or I should say ESPN.com, pretty much posted the same article. But what they did is they ranked all 32 teams in regard to their rosters. They have the Giants sitting at 25. Their top five players, Odell, Olivier Vernon, Snacks, JPP, and Jonathan Hankins. Those are who they have listed as their top five players. Starters who should be upgraded, Flowers, John Jerry, Marshall Newhouse, Larry Donnell, Devon Kennard, Keenan Robinson, Landon Collins. Starters who should be upgraded. So they feel that those players should really be better this coming season. Now, here's where it doesn't sit well with me. Number one, the fact that they're ranked 25th out of 32 doesn't sit well with me. I think they're a much better team than 25. How about this? They have the Eagles at 5. Their top five players, Fletcher Cox, Jason Peters, Malcolm Jenkins, Brandon Graham, and QB Sam Bradford. I'm sorry. I'd take Eli Manning over Sam Bradford every day in the week and twice on Sunday. All right, starters who should be upgraded. I'm going to list just their top five players. Then they have the Dallas Cowboys at 12. Okay? Tyron Smith, Zach Martin, Travis Frederick, Sean Lee, and, of course, Tony Romo. Then they have Washington at 21. Okay? With Trent Williams, Josh Norman, Jordan Reed, Chris Baker, and Ryan Kerrigan. So they have the Giants last in the NFC East. This doesn't sit well with me. I disagree with this. I wholeheartedly disagree with this. And I'm curious. I'd like to hear from some of our listeners out there.
Well, what's also interesting, just from what you read, you know, they're talking about upgrading starters, and those starters that you listed, some of them, have not even solidified starting jobs. So it's a little misleading to say you need an upgrade when
Keenan Robinson
hasn't even won the starting job yet. So,
right.
I mean, to label him as a starter.
I think they're assuming.
Well, that's a big assumption, though.
It is.
Jasper Brinkley could easily be the starter.
Right.
And could be the guy that gets the most reps.
And Larry Donnell, we know we've spoken to the tight end coaches here. The tight end coach, Junior.
Kevin Gilbride,
yes. Jr. He said it's going to be a competition at the tight end position. It's not necessarily Larry Donnell's job to lose. That's going to be a competition. The middle linebacker position is going to be a competition. John Jerry is going to be competing with Hart for that guard position. That's going to be a competition as well. And, yes, right now, Marshall Newhouse is the starting right tackle.
Or he could be competing with Bobby Hart, too, for the tackle spot, too. I wouldn't necessarily cancel that out. So those are at least some of the recent articles that were published in terms of, you know, where they see the Giants roster, how they break it down. I think the NFL.com one's a little bit more substantive because it's got a breakdown in terms of blue chips, players, risers, as opposed to speculating who's going to be the starter and so forth. But with that being said, we want to open up the phone lines right now at 201-939-4513. Let's get things going here on Monday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live. Rocky is in Panama City. Rocky, what's happening? Long time no speak.
What's up, Lance?
Doing well, Rocky. How's things with you?
Hey, Mr. Nathan.
Hi. Welcome in. Happy Monday.
Hey, yeah. Glad to hear y'all back on the show. I'm glad y'all talking about the tight ends and linebackers because that's what I wanted to touch on. I have a couple of questions on them. I think that linebacker competition, all three spots would be up for grabs, really. And I agree with Shakes. I kind of wouldn't mind seeing Larry Robinson take that whiff spot from J.T. Thomas. And I think Baker probably wins the Mike job. But does Shepard have a realistic shot of unseating Kennard for the Sam spot? Or probably not.
You're talking about Kelvin Shepard, who they signed from the Dolphins. I mean, right now he's being viewed as a middle linebacker. He has experience at other positions, Rocky. I don't know necessarily if they envision him perhaps at other spots, and he has yet to really speak to the media in terms of whether or not they've opened up his responsibility. Keenan Robinson last spoke to the media, and he said, hey, they haven't just been using me in the middle, they've been using me on the outside as well. Shepard hasn't been on the record saying that, and from what I've seen, they envision him mainly as a middle linebacker, at least right now.
Okay, I just saw Shepard kind of as a Sam. Is that what he played at LSU with Sam?
Well, but remember, Shepard's been in the league for quite some time. He's not just coming out of college, Rocky. He's been with a number of teams, the Colts, the Bills, the Dolphins, and so forth. So, you know, he's come a long way since how he was utilized in college. I wouldn't put too much stock in that.
Yeah, well, I thought he played some at Miami, too. But, okay, and I heard the rookie Adams and LaCrosse has been tearing it up at the tight end spot, and I know a few callers said they didn't see Donnell making the 53, and I didn't either, but ain't it pretty much Ty's job to lose right now? Is there a chance that LaCrosse can take that starting job from him?
Well, LaCrosse has looked good in OTAs. We brought him up last week. I mean, every time I've been out there, I've seen him make a catch. I've seen him hustle and so forth. So, I mean, I think he's taken advantage of his reps, and he's worked with the first team at times. But, you know, to say that somebody's got the front job right now or is the guy to beat, I don't know if I'd necessarily label anybody in particular. I think Will Tye and Larry Donnell come back with the most experience. So, by default, they're the favorites. But if LaCrosse keeps up and shows something in training camp in the preseason, you know, I don't think the Giants have necessarily penned anybody in right now because, you know, while Tye and Donnell have experience, it's still sample size-wise small compared to other established tight ends in the league right now.
Right, yeah, and I think that's about as right. I think it's exactly the way McAdoo wants it right now to create as much competition as he
Bingo.
Can at all those spots.
Absolutely.
Okay, thank you.
All right, Rocky, appreciate the phone call. And his last statement, I agree. Create as much competition as possible at
yeah,
every single position.
I mean, and I think that's indicative in regard to the number of free agents that were brought in here, that are really roaming around here, that are trying to compete for a job. I mean, you know, it's I believe it's the largest number that the Giants have brought in quite a while, if ever.
You're talking about undrafted free agents?
Yeah,
yeah. Very big group. And at all positions, too.
And you do that to create the atmosphere of competition, you know? And competition is good for a lot of people, even though Sam Bradford might not agree with it. But
everybody's entitled to their opinion. But here, I don't necessarily think anybody's got an issue. They're all out there. They're working hard. And, you know, nobody necessarily is atop the list because, you know, at some of these positions, there's also a bunch of young guys that had starting jobs last season. So, you know, they can't even themselves take things for granted. And I'm not using Landon Collins as a guy that I think is in jeopardy, but, you know, Landon Collins returns from last year as a starter. He's only had 1 year in the league. So what I'm saying is there's a number of players who have starting jobs on the Giants roster. They've only been in that spot for 1 year. And nobody after 1 year can say, hey, I've solidified it and that there's no competition that's all of a sudden going to move in front of me.
Yes, but, you know, at the same time, you know, when you're talking about a player who's been drafted in the first round or you're talking about a player that was drafted in the second round and an organization traded up to get him, probability is on his side. You know, when an organization does that, politics does play a role like it does in every job, on every team, in every organization. And this organization is going to give Landon Collins every opportunity to prove his worth and why the Giants traded up to get him in the second round. So I just don't think Landon Collins is a good example.
Well, I wasn't speculating that he was going to lose his job. I'm saying that there's a number of players that have only had 1 year under their belt.
Right.
You know, if you want to use Will Tye as an example,
perfect.
He's another guy. It doesn't matter to me whether you were drafted or whether you were an undrafted free agent, because there have also been stories of players that have been second round picks and after a year or two were let go and released, or third round picks that were let go. For example, Lewis Nix was a top three pick for the Texans, and he was let go.
But that doesn't happen here.
Well, I'm not saying it happens, but any player, regardless of what organization you wear the jersey for, you cannot take anything for granted that what happened 1 year is going to all of a sudden carry over into the next year.
I'm totally with you. You're absolutely right. But this organization and Jerry Reese and John Mara give their draft picks every opportunity. Because, listen, some guys don't develop till late. Look at Cameron Wake. I just found out last year Cameron Wake was on this practice squad. Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like, some guys just develop later. Some guys peak. Some guys just, the light bulb goes on. The game slows down. They get stronger. Their technique gets better. They hone their skills, whatever the case may be. And so the Giants are just, they're just one of those organizations that's very, very committed to giving whatever players they go out and draft a home and an opportunity to grow, develop, and hopefully become the player that they expected them to be.
Let's head back.
I'd say more so than most teams in the NFL.
Let's head back to the phone lines. We got Sam in D.C. Sam, what's happening? Sam, are you there?
Going, Anita.
Hey, welcome
how's it
in.
Going?
Doing well, Sam.
Where would you guys rather be than hosting Big Blue Kickoff Live on this beautiful sunny day outside, right?
Are you seriously asking me this as I'm sitting here with a golf shirt on? Are you really asking me this question?
Yeah, I know, and that's why I just had to dig at it a little bit, you know, and say that from a fan's perspective, that's why we enjoy the fact that you guys are hosting for us today. Appreciate it.
No worries.
Oh, please. Listen, I'm not complaining. This is a blast. Absolutely. But if you're asking me if I'd rather be on a golf course somewhere, yeah, I probably would be.
Well, I think one hour is not necessarily a huge sacrifice for a day that's got 24. So.
No.
Yeah, and for sure, you know, with this franchise, definitely there's always a lot to talk about. And, you know, you guys were talking about pretty much risers and blue chip players. And, I definitely had, as a blue chip player myself, I thought Landon Collins definitely last year, at least for 1 year, proved to be a blue chip kind of player. But if you give me somebody who has longevity on this team, I definitely have to vote for JPP. I think to come back from what he's come back from, you got to give him credit for working as hard as he has. And, you know, it's not a lot of the stuff that the fans and I see every day on Sunday, but I can't imagine the effort, the amount of hard work that it would take to come back from the injury that he suffered last year. So
it's
definitely my hat's off to him.
Yeah, I will say this. I think it's one of the most amazing stories from last season. I really do. And you know, just to be able to, we talk about the physical, and obviously that's the most important thing that fans want to see, because, you know, they look at JPP as a defensive end and they want to see what type of production he's going to create for their team. I totally get that. But I think we forget sometimes the mental aspect of what JPP had to go through, you know, in regard to like what his hand looks like right now and how he goes through life with this and that experience. And so to be able to really achieve what he's been able to achieve on and off the football field, Lance, I think it's one of the most remarkable stories from last season.
Well, I was impressed that he played 8 games last season. That's what impressed me. I don't think many people expected him to play that many games. If you would have told me after all he went through, he's going to play half the season, I'd say, hey, I think I'd take that, given everything that he went through. So it was good to see him back on the field. It was good to see him get his legs back underneath him. I think with an entire off-season program, training camp, that's only going to help him slowly get back to his comfort zone. And, you know, throughout the remainder of his career, he's always going to have to make adjustments because the way that he went about, as you alluded to, his life and the way he went about working as a football player, having access to, you know, all 10 fingers, you take that for granted. I think anybody takes that for granted. There's going to be adjustments along the way, but the more and more work you put in the offseason, you're around your teammates, you're around the coaching staff, you're around the scheme, the confidence starts to get back to where it was. I think that's only going to help him entering this season.
Yeah, and also, I mean, keep in mind, you know, the talent that now that this team has brought in and has put around him. You know, we sit here and we talk about how Robert Ayers benefited from JPP last year. You know, the nine sacks that Robert Ayers had. You know, 6 of the 9 came when JPP came back and was part of that defensive line. Now what? I've said this before. Teams aren't going to be able to double-team JPP anymore. They're not going to be able to double-team anyone, especially with sacks, Hankins, Vernon, JPP. I mean, this defensive line, one of the most talented in the NFL, you're not going to be able to double-team anyone.
They're going to have to pick and choose who they want to focus in on. That's what's going to be interesting to see in the early stages of the season. And then if they tend to put their focus, let's say, on Vernon or Snacks, it's up to the other guys to win their one-on-one battles. That's what's going to define this defensive line. Who's going to win the one-on-one battles? You know, it looks great on paper, and these guys are coming together, but the one-on-one battles, that's what's going to make this defensive group stand out because somebody's going to get the attention. Who that is, that remains to be seen until they actually play games again on the field. Who wins their one-on-one battles? I think that's going to be a huge storyline. And Sam, thank you for the phone call. Thanks so much for weighing in. 201-939-4513. That is the telephone number. Jerome is in Charlotte. Jerome, what's happening?
Hey, how are you guys doing? I just, you know, want to make two quick comments before I get to my question.
Sure.
And the first one is about Eli. I think Eli is on course for the best season of his life. I believe he's going to throw for over 5,000 yards, 50 touchdowns.
Wow.
But it amazes me how he don't get the respect as the best quarterback, not only in the division, but in the whole conference by itself, having 2 MVP Super Bowls. And the other comment is about the line. I think with the defense, the way they made the changes, the offensive line got to get better in practice. Not only in practice, it will turn over into games because the defense has evolved so much. And my biggest question is about Williams, the running back. I've been hearing comments, listening to commentators saying how he might be on his way out, but I think we need him as an insurance for Jenkins as a power back to give us some hard yards. I want to hear y'all comment on that also.
Well, Williams slimmed down this offseason, and I think he's extremely motivated to bounce back from last year. It was a rotational group last year. We don't know exactly how the carries are going to break down this year. Way too early to tell. He's got some competition, though, with Paul Perkins being drafted, what Orleans Darkwood did last year, though he's banged up right now, and then Shane Vereen, if his role increases and so forth. So, you know, nobody can walk in right now in that running back room and say, you know, oh, I just got to hold off one guy. There's a lot of guys in the mix that are going to be hungry for jobs. I think, you know, it remains to be seen what happens in training camp and in the preseason. To say that anybody has solidified a job, I think, would be getting ahead of ourselves, other than, you know, we're assuming Jennings, Vereen, and Paul Perkins, given that he was drafted, are in pretty good shape. But who knows? Things are always fluid and things can always change.
You know, one thing about Andre Williams is this offseason he took up martial arts. And he's really, really working on his core. You know, the biggest knock with Andre is his vision or lack thereof. And, you know, one of the most difficult things I think about a running back is timing of, you know, when a hole opens up in the NFL, it's not for long. And so a lot of times a running back has to really trust that that hole is going to be created and really hit that hole before he visually sees it open. And I think that's been one of the most difficult things for Andre Williams. It's much different in regard to college. I mean, college football, it's like, you know, you see light for days and you run right through it. So I think that's been the most difficult transition for him. He did get the LASIK surgery. Last year we did this really neat piece with him in regard to these Nike goggles that he's been wearing that are strobe goggles. And so what it does is it blinds you for a second. And so for about an hour and a half before practice during training camp last year, he was doing drills with racquetballs with these blinking lights to try to work on his vision and his eye-hand coordination. And then now this year he went out and he's been doing a lot of martial arts and he's really been working on his core. So, you know, this is a dude who's like, he's doing everything he can. You know, he's banging down every door. He's doing everything he can to try to get better so that he can compete for this position and be a part of whatever rotation might work. And so you have to commend him for that. You know what I mean? He's thinking out of the box, and he's trying to do all he can.
And it shows physically, and I think it also shows mentally, too, just how he, you know, is talking to the media, his confidence, and so forth. I think that's been apparent in the early stages of OTAs. The caller's point, though, with respect to Andre Williams, was he needs to remain on the roster. It's important to still have him as an insurance to Rashad Jennings as the second power back. And if you were to say after Jennings, you know, who is best fit to carry the load or handle short yarded situations, I think from a physical standpoint, you know, Andre Williams meets that criteria. I wouldn't necessarily disagree with that sentiment, but I also think that sometimes we tend to overlook guys like Shane Vereen, who I think can handle short yarded situations too. He just may have not been utilized in that position throughout the course of at least his short tenure with the Giants. That doesn't mean, though, they can't call upon him under those circumstances.
By the way, while we're sitting here hosting the show in the comfy confines of an air-conditioned office, you've got the media who are watching practice right now. And after practice is over, Ben McAdoo will make himself available to the media. Certain players will be made available to the media, and those interviews will be on Giants.com a little bit later on this afternoon. But at the same time, PDOT, Paul Dottino, is out there. He's texting me. He said tight end Matt Lacoste getting a lot of snaps with the first team starters today. So getting a lot of looks.
Which he has before, too.
And looking good. So just FYI. Little update from PDOT. Which is nice.
And McAdoo,
thinking of us,
is actually speaking to the media as we speak right now. And just a few things that he has been saying. He says Shepard is the type of rookie that while he'll make a mistake here or there, he does not repeat it. He learns from his mistakes. And he also said that he sees JPP, coincidentally we were just talking about him, much more comfortable this year, was his comment so far. So anything else that McAdoo says during his meeting with the media will certainly throw that your way. In the meantime, let's head back to the phone lines. But we want to remind you that Big Blue Kickoff Live brought to you by DraftKings. Now, if you've never played on DraftKings, it's changed the way we play fantasy sports. Pick your contest, pick your players. If you win, pick up your cash. Simple as that. Go to DraftKings.com, enter promo code CONTACT to claim your free entry today. DraftKings Fantasy Sports, free to play. Patrick is in North Carolina. Patrick, what's happening?
Hey, guys, I had two blue-chip players, and then I had a comment about ESPN's poll.
Sure.
My two blue-chip players are Shane Vereen for what he does out of the backfield, you know, both as a runner and a catcher, more so as a catcher. And on special teams, I don't think Dwayne Harris gets enough respect for what he does as far as his contributions to the team. I don't think our special teams would have been the same without him last year.
Absolutely. I would agree with that. I think he made a huge difference, and he didn't just make a difference in terms of the return game. Remember, he played all four teams, so it's his coverage skills, too, that I think has been overlooked throughout the entirety of his career, going back to his days with the Cowboys, because how many guys are getting pats on the back for, hey, you know what, he's a good coverage guy on special teams? They're not, because those things never make the highlights unless you really sit down and study the film, or at least are watching that facet of his game.
Yeah, and in regards to ESPN, I both agree with Anita that 25 is way too low, considering that, you know, NFL did have us as one of the 10 best improved teams, well, talented rosters. But two of the positions that they did mention in the ESPN piece is two positions, well, the unit, linebacker unit as a whole on defense and the tight end position on offense. We've been getting production out of the tight end position. I've called and talked about this before, but we haven't had the same guy. We haven't been able to build up continuity. We haven't been able to develop that one guy here for a while since the Kevin Bosses of the world and those types of guys. And on the linebacking units, we used to be famous for our linebacking corps, and we really haven't had that guy since Antonio Pierce, who was we brought over from the Redskins. We haven't really developed that one guy that we can say is, you know, a dominant linebacker. We develop a defensive line now, and we have defensive ends that we develop and come along, but we haven't had that linebacker come through the system in a long time.
Well, I mean, part of that is they've been trying to work some young guys into the mix over the last few years, so, you know, it's hard for a guy to come in day one and all of a sudden be labeled as dominant. Then remember, you know, they make the trade for John Beeson. He unfortunately could not stay healthy. So I think those factors have contributed, Patrick, to why you haven't seen, forget dominant, how about just continuity at that position? I think it's been the combination of reliance on young guys with injuries. And if that's happening pretty much every single year, it's not necessarily a surprise that you haven't had too much continuity out of that spot. You could say the same thing to a certain degree, Patrick, with the tight end position. You know, at least the last few years you've dealt with some injuries. You know, prior to that, it was a matter of guys were being signed for 1 year, and then obviously they were testing the free agent market. For example, Martellus Bennett signed off the Cowboys, and then all of a sudden he had a very good season. He cashed in on that, and there had been that trend, too, that had taken place for a few years.
I think it's more so the fact that in the draft, we don't typically take linebackers too high. We take them later in the draft. Not that that has anything to do with what they might be on the field, but it has been a trend. And the fact that we usually end up taking guys from other teams in free agency. And as far as the tight end position, same thing can be said. We haven't really drafted a tight end too highly within the past couple of years to develop and groom into that, you know, star quality player.
You know, and just to interject here, you know, I think a big reason why this team, and I think a lot of teams, when you look around the landscape in the NFL, like, you know, is there a team out there that just has, like, a kick-butt linebacking core? Yeah, you look around, you know, you've got Clay Matthews with the Green Bay Packers, you know, Patrick Willett. Like, you know, there are stud tight ends, but like when you look across the board of all 32 teams, is there a team out there that has like three quality stud linebackers?
I'd throw the Panthers in the mix. I think Carolina has some really good
players. Panthers and the Cowboys.
But not, this is my point. Yes, you're going to find a team or two, three teams out there. But this is my point. My point is it's not as frequent as it used to be. And I think a big reason for that is because the NFL has gone to a pass-happy league. Your base defense now, you're starting with five DBs, sometimes six. So I think teams are looking to draft and teams are looking to spend more money in free agency in regard to defensive linemen to pin their ears back and get after the quarterback, and also DBs that are going to step up, because you need three starting corners on your team right now because that slot position has become a starting position in the NFL. And I think that's a big reason why you're seeing that.
Well, I get all that. It's just that the last time that our defense was truly a dominant defense, we had the guys up front, plus we had Antonio Pierce to man the middle and we had guys on the back, and we pressured up front with the front line and played great man-to-man defense in the back end, but we also had Antonio and the Pierce directing the traffic.
Well, I think they're trying to get back to that, Patrick, where they've beefed up the defensive line, as you noted. So you improve the pass rush, you improve the pressure. It's only going to help the linebackers. And then between the mix of DRC, Janoris Jenkins, and Eli Apple, you hope that you've improved also your coverage on the back end. And then all of that will obviously complement one another. I mean, I think that's ultimately the goal when you look at how this Giants defense is starting to come together. And I think that there have been other linebackers, when those conditions have been met, that have not necessarily been household names, Patrick, but have done well. For example, Chase Blackburn wasn't a household name, but he was a guy that would study very hard. He would understand players' tendencies, and with a good pass rush and a good secondary, he flourished. So I think that you don't necessarily need household names or dominant guys, assuming that you have those other pieces that you just spoke about.
Oh, I appreciate your guys' time and for answering all the questions.
All right, Patrick. Thanks so much for weighing in.
Thank you for watching, and thank you for being a part of the show.
The other thing I wanted to say with respect to the tight end position, he mentioned, you know, they haven't necessarily drafted a tight end high, but they also have gotten good production out of tight ends that have been undrafted free agents or late-round picks. Kevin Boss, Jake Ballard, you know, those guys have been productive. They just didn't necessarily were taken in the first or the second round. So I don't think there's necessarily a rule of thumb. You have to take a tight end who's a first-round pick or a second-round pick, like a Jeremy Shockey, for example. You can get quality players, which the Giants have shown. I think his point, which I understand, is you'd like to see a guy flourish 1 year and then remain in that position for, let's say, 3 or 4 years to follow. And it's not as if the Giants haven't given a player to claim that job and run with it. The problem is the injury bug strikes again. Larry Donnell, off a good year, got hurt. So that's really been, to me, the biggest stumbling block. It's not that there's not some substance in these tight ends. It's just, unfortunately, the reason why we haven't seen much continuity is after a good year, they either leave via free agency or they've gotten hurt. So you're hoping that some of these players who are banged up can remain healthy and that you can get that longevity going once again.
Yeah, absolutely.
Let's head back to the phone lines and we check in with Jeff in Rhode Island. Jeff, what's happening?
Hey, guys. Hi, Anita. Lance, how you guys doing today?
Good morning.
Doing well, Jeff.
Or good afternoon, actually.
Yeah, it is good afternoon. But I wouldn't be too upset with these ratings or rankings, Anita. I mean, after all, it's, you know, only beginning of June, and it's just somebody's opinion, and they don't really mean much to me at any time. You know, we'll have a better idea where the Giants are once the regular season starts. But the reason I called today, I don't know if you guys have actually been out and watched any of the OTAs. I was just curious about if you have been out there and actually watched, if you've seen anything from the kid Lewis and the wide receiver Lewis from Bowling Green. And there's another kid there, Poe. I'm not sure how you pronounce
correct.
His last name. Poe.
Yeah.
Have you actually been out there and seen anything from these guys at all? I know it's early, and I shouldn't be asking you this until training camp, but I was just curious if you've seen anything from either one of them.
Well, Roger Lewis, who you're referring to, out of Bowling Green, he's gotten some opportunities when some players have missed OTAs, whether it be, you know, Beckham and Victor Cruz is still doing work on the side. And, you know, I've seen him make some catches. But remember, you know, there's only so much he could take away at the same time, Jeff, and you know this watching them go through the routine and so forth. But to answer your question, he's been involved. He's not a guy that, you know, they're just keeping on the sideline. He's been working in and out of the scheme. I said he's made some catches when his number's been called. I really am going to be able to tell what he could do, though, not until training camp and the preseason games. And I think you, even the viewer and the listener, will also be able to get a better gauge of what he could bring to the table once you see tackling pads are put on and so forth. But he is involved from the OTA's perspective, and I think that when his number has been called, he's certainly taken advantage of that.
Okay, yeah. I'm hoping that Matt Lacoste turns out to be something, too, this year. He seems to have some ability. So, we'll see how it all plays out once training camp starts. So, you guys have a good day. Thank you.
Thank
you. You got it, Jeff. Appreciate
the call.
Thank you
for the phone call. Again, Paul Tedino telling me that Lacoste looked pretty good today and got a lot of action with the first team. So, good for him.
Well, he came in last year. He was on the practice squad. He was called up late last season because of all the injuries on the roster. He's been here. He knows the scheme. And he's a versatile player. I keep going back to how they utilized him in college. He was pretty much utilized everywhere. And, you know, when you look at this tight end group, as I mentioned, although there's players who have been in the scheme and have had experience, there's some injury questions, and even those two players in particular don't have a whole lot of NFL experience. So I think Lacoste is going to have a shot. It just remains to be seen whether or not they're going to, you know, give him the opportunities moving forward with the first team. I wouldn't read so much into OTAs in terms of, oh, this guy's been working with the first team. That means, you know, this is their guy. This is the time you have to rotate players into the first team because you want them to get comfortable with everybody, especially a guy like Eli Manning. So, you know, when you see, oh, you know, he's been on the first team for two or three consecutive days, coaching staff loves him. They're doing this with the secondary guys. They're doing with this offensive guys. I wouldn't take it away and run with it and say, this is definitely that player at that position.
Yeah, but, you know, when you got Darian Thompson, who's getting more reps with the first team than, let's say, Mikel Thompson or Bennett Jackson, you've got to take notice of that. You know, I'm not saying it's the end-all, be-all, but it's definitely a positive sign.
Well, but to me, I'm not that surprised that Darian Thompson is getting as many reps, considering Mikel Thompson was hurt all of last season and Bennett Jackson, too. So they're all rookies as far as I'm concerned. All three of those guys are really on the same level.
No.
Nobody really has a tremendous edge.
Because you've got those guys who know the system.
Well, they know the system, but
Lance,
I'm saying
that's a huge edge.
NFL experience, though, in terms of being on the field and playing, they're all pretty much at the same level because they haven't really been on the field as much.
See, I disagree with you. When you know a system and you know a defense and you could just let your athleticism shine, then that's an advantage. So I think the guys that have been here definitely have it, because it's, you know, you're out there, and when a defense and signal calls and schemes don't just immediately come easy to you, and you really have to think about, okay, well, all right, so we're in this scheme, therefore this is my responsibility. If this wide receiver runs an out route, okay, I take him now. When you have to think of all that and, like, really digest it while you're out there seconds before the ball's being snapped, you know what? It takes away from it. So I actually do believe that the Bennett Jacksons and the Nat Burhays and the Mikel Thompsons, I think they do have an advantage.
Well, so, I think that from a mental standpoint, of course, they know the system. I'm just saying that Thompson's played a lot of football in the last year, more so than all of them combined. So the transition, I don't think, is as overwhelming as maybe some other rookies. Plus, if you look at what he was asked to do at Boise State, he's coming from a system where he was asked to be that vocal leader. So those things have come natural to him, as opposed to another rookie who comes in to a system and he wasn't asked to be that vocal leader. That's why I think that gives at least an edge to Thompson over typical rookies. But he's had experience on the field, and you can know the book backwards and forwards, but there's a distinct difference between then implementing it onto the field, which Thompson's been doing much more so than Mikel Thompson I'm talking about, and Nat Burhay over the last few years. And we've seen that, because usually you see a rookie, especially in the secondary, he has his ups and downs. Thompson, it's been very smooth. And this goes back to rookie minicamp. The day he walked in this building, I mean, he was vocally present. Other rookies were taking a look at what he was doing, and even he caught the eye of the coaching staff. I haven't seen too many secondary rookies come in. And I don't even remember Landon Collins, that happening for him last year, when Collins came in, and he was taken much higher than Thompson, where Collins came in, and then day one, wow. You felt his presence.
No, all that.
Darian Thompson, you're feeling his presence.
Lance, all of that is true. We've seen it. Absolutely. But take it from someone like I've played. Take it from me. I'm telling you, it's much different when you just know the playbook and you don't have to think so much. Your athleticism shines. So, and I'm not to say, hey, listen, at some point in time, that, you know, that playbook and that knowledge and that mental capacity is going to become easier for Darian Thompson, and I have no doubt he will. I mean, based on what we've seen, it would not be shocking to me. It's not going to be shocking to me if Darian Thompson is a starter opposite Landon Collins come regular season game one against the Dallas Cowboys. That's what I said when we opened up the show. It wouldn't, because everything that you're talking about, his athleticism, his skill set, as you said, the way that he played in college, as of right now, my money's on him, man. My money's on him.
Well, the minute they drafted him, I felt that, you know, he had a really good chance to solidify the starting job. And I don't think anything has shown me that I should change that philosophy. A lot could change, obviously, during the course of training camp and the preseason, but there's a reason why Ben McAdoo, as I read you that quote during his presser, is already noting that Darian Thompson's standing out. He's building day one to day two to day three. You're seeing constant improvement. McAdoo's consistently been talking him up. That's more of a sign than perhaps some of the other things that we've been observing at OTAs. Let's head back to the phone lines here. Ivan is in Miami. Ivan, what's happening?
Hey, how's it going, guys? Thanks for having me. I listen to you guys every day.
Well, thanks for making the call.
Before I get into anything, kind of just going back to what you guys were debating about, I think Thompson is automatically – there's no question that he's probably the most talented and he has the most kind of it factor. I think the people who were injured, they do know the system, so you have a good point. But at the other hand, I think that they're worried. I think in the back of their head, they're worried about that injury since they didn't play much. So I feel like in one perspective, they know the playbook, but in another perspective, they can't go 100% because they're kind of worried about what they already went through in the past. I'm not sure if you know, everybody goes through injuries differently. So I think Darian Thompson, I think he's going to lead our team in interceptions, and I think he's going to hold down the secondary. I just wanted to talk to you guys about us spending. We never really spend. We finally spent this year, and I want to know if you guys think we will make the Super Bowl.
Oh, wow.
It's very early to say something like that because of how the rest of the NFL looks, too.
It's week one. We got to see him on the field. But I actually met Olivier Vernon and spoke to him a little bit, and I feel like the amount of depth that we were finally able to get. I actually called last year and talked to John, and I was upset because we weren't spending, and we kept trying to develop our players, and that wasn't working for us. It was kind of killing us every year. So I feel like now that we have some consistency, it's really and we spent a little bit more money, I feel like now we have to go out there and put it all together.
Well, you know, it's interesting. There's a few things. Number one, in regard to what my expectation is for this team, I think I've said it before, and I know people don't like to do this, but I'm looking at the schedule from last year, and I'm assuming that these teams from last year, and in regard to the way that they played, things they've done in the off season, upgrades, players that they lost, whatever the case may be, I'm pretty optimistic that I think the Giants are going to win 10 games. Now, does 10 games win this division? I don't know. I think Dallas is going to be really, really good. If Tony Romo can stay healthy, that's the team that I'm probably most concerned about. I think the Giants have a really, really good shot of either A, winning this division, or B, making it as a wild card in the NFC. And then once you get into the playoffs, then you know what? Everything changes. It's a clean slate. I mean, look what the Giants did the last time they won the Super Bowl. At one point in time, they were a 500 team. So you never know. But I do believe this team has a great chance.
Do you think that outside of – I mean, we don't know what we're going to get out of Victor. I mean, that's obviously the question mark. I hear – we talk about it every single day. It's like being a dead horse at this point. But I feel like if we can get him at 60%, then our receiving core is going to be so difficult to stop, along with, you know, a little bit more consistency in the running game. Rashard had a really good end of the season last year. Washington is probably going to have a similar season than they did last year. Kirk Cousins will probably never have another season like he did. But I feel like we're better than anybody in the NFC East, even though it's a toss-up. It is every year.
You know, the fact that this Giants team went out and drafted Sterling Shepard, to me, I'm a little bit more at ease in regard to the pressure for Victor Cruz. Listen, he was out the other day, the last OTA that the media was here and we were able to watch practice. I want to say that Paul and I were hosting, and Paul was really thrilled in regard to the skills that they were running, the technique that they were running with Victor Cruz in regard to it wasn't just like cone drills and sprints.
Well, they're doing resistance type of
that's
drills.
It. The yeah. resistance
oh, okay,
stuff.
Okay. And
he looked good and he responded well from that. So that's a very positive thing. I think there's a lot of optimism around Victor Cruz. But the fact that this team has Sterling Shepard, to me, I don't know about you, I'm not so hung up on, wow, we need a 75% Victor Cruz. now that Sterling Shepard's on this roster, do you feel a little bit more at ease in regard to this wide receiving core?
Yeah, I think Shepard certainly. I'll let you speak. Go ahead, Ivan.
No. I'm sorry. I apologize.
No. Go ahead. Well, listen, I got plenty
of
time to talk. We'll listen.
And all of our runs, right? We've always had that three receiver set. We had Manningham, we had Hakeem. So I feel like we are going to need three at least. Preston Parker was god awful last year. I think anybody could have went out and played better than him. But I think that the reason that I say that is just if we could have Victor at a level where he can consistently just catch balls and kind of he doesn't have to be that yards after the catch guy he was. But I feel like every time we've ever won, you know, big, it was because we had. You know, a good three receiver set at least. And I know we have a whole bunch of young guys that are going out there. They want to go prove themselves. I like the way the King kid looks. I know that we have a ton of them. Nobody knows who's going to actually get the playing time. And I do agree that Victor probably feels a little bit more at ease. But now I'm worrying if Sterling is a little bit less at ease because everybody's like, oh, Sterling Shepard, he's our guy. He's the guy. We don't got to worry about Victor now because Sterling is going to come in. He has a good football background, but are we putting too much on him already?
Oh, I'm not worried about it. He's bright-eyed, bushy-tailed. He's happy to be here. He's thrilled. He wants the pressure. And another thing is, keep in mind, he's playing opposite Odell Beckham Jr. At the end of the day, how much pressure do you think he's really feeling? What a gift to play opposite Odell Beckham Jr. and to have Eli Manning as your quarterback. What wide receiver coming out of college wouldn't die for that situation?
Yeah, he's walking into a great situation.
Merry Christmas. Christmas.
For sure.
I don't think he has anything to complain about from that perspective. Plus, you know, he's coming from a big program too, Ivan. And you know, most of these players, they're used to playing big games from the time they walk in the building. I think his approach is the same here in the NFL, where he knows he was a second-round pick. He knows Victor Cruz is coming off injury, that expectations are high at least that he's going to come in and contribute immediately. I think he at least understands that. Does he necessarily say to himself, I got to come in and I have to catch 8 passes a game for 100 yards? I mean, that to me is unrealistic. But I think any rookie that is taken in the first 2 rounds realizes they're going to expect me to come in day one and I'm going to be a contributor day one. And I'm sure that's what his mindset is right now.
Eli Apple worries me a little bit just because he seems so raw. I know that he, in a few years, he's one of those real big guys. He should be able to be really physical, and he gets to play Odell, kind of pointing back to what you guys were talking about. Having Odell on the team, obviously, is we never knew what we were getting with Odell. We got basically one of the best in the entire league. So, but I think that the only question mark right now, I think that we need to go get another veteran safety. Entrell, I don't think they'll bring him back. I wish they will. I don't know if he wants to come back on a reduced role. But we do, and it's just like Dylan was talking about, you know, how Landon did so good without having a veteran safety back there. I think that we need a little bit more veteranship just to kind of help them with the transitions because we're really, really young. And I feel like when it comes to that crunch time, they're going to make those mistakes if they don't have that veteranship to let them know what they're supposed to do in those crunch situations.
Well, Ivan, here's the other thing to consider. That veteran leadership that in crunch time that you're referring to, it doesn't necessarily have to come from a safety. You know, it could come from a linebacker. The linebacker usually in the middle is the guy that sets up the entire defense. So he's supposed
Correct.
To tell the safeties, hey, we need you in this prime position because this is maybe the entity of the field that they're targeting. So I understand your point, and I'm not saying that it's not important, but I think we tend to get caught up. You got a young safety on the roster. The guy next to him has to be a veteran. I just think you need a veteran or two within the starting defense, especially in the position who's going to set the defense in the right spots. And I think at that middle linebacker spot right now, I think you have that vocal presence. And I think at the corner spot, you have some veterans that I think can help the safeties too. I don't know if we got to get so caught up that Landon Collins and a rookie can't be on the field at the same time together this season.
No.
I wouldn't get too overworked with that.
Yeah, no, I'm not too worried about the fact that the veteran plays. Like I said, I wish Antrell would come just to be what he is, that vocal leader that we've kind of missed. You know, we haven't had a guy like Tuck, and I know that JT Thomas is big as far as the leadership, and I know that I love our linebacker core right now, especially. I'm not saying so much playing, but I mean just kind of being able to look at the game from the outside and kind of coach them along the way. I completely agree with you. I feel like our safeties are going to be some of the most developed, and they're going to do some of the most in the entire league. That's just my personal opinion. Outside of my fanhood, I really feel like Glendon is going to make a jump. Who do you guys think takes the middle linebacker spot and really holds that thing together in the middle? Because I know that we have a few. I like the rookie we got. I know that we have a lot of solid players at the linebacker position, but who's going to be the one that we can say, okay, he's going to go ahead and he's going to get that defense to play at a high level?
I think it's Jesper right now, just on the fact that how well he knows the system, his leadership, how vocal he is, how Spags really kind of connected with him last season. But it will be a competition, and we'll see if Keenan Robinson can win the battle against Brinkley. Another thing, you talk about leadership, and not that I have not had the chance to get to know him very well, but everything I'm hearing about, like, being that rah-rah, that guy in the locker room, that Deion Grant, that John Beeson, that Antro role, is Jenkins. I'm hearing that Jenkins kind of can bring that swagger, bring that kind of veteran leadership into that locker room. It's going to be really intriguing to see. But at the same time, now keep in mind, it's hard. It's his first year here on the roster. So that's hard to come in. But listen, I saw John Beeson do it. Not everybody's John Beeson, but it's going to be interesting to see how that role develops for Jenkins. If everybody I'm talking to is telling me that that's the expectation for him.
Ivan, appreciate the phone call. Thanks so much for chiming in. He brought up also Antro role and, you know, having maybe another veteran return. But I think what's important is that somebody that's going to be on this roster for the next few years emerges and becomes that leader. Because bringing in a veteran for a year, all that's going to do is put you in position to go back to square one, where then you're going to have to revisit this topic all over again the following season. So that's why I think somebody right now on the roster, you want your leader to be groomed out of that group, whether it be a veteran, whether it be a rookie, as opposed to saying, let's bring in somebody who's gone through what we need. You bring them back for a year. They may not even want that role because they want to actually play and not be that symbolic leadership figure. It's just, to me, it's not worth going down that road. I think they're going to find somebody, and naturally the process will happen. And I think we're already starting to see the process. I mean, I wrote about this on Giants.com. Now, every time I'm watching OTAs, you know, Brinkley, he gets the huddle together. You know, they seem to be listening to him. He's vocal. That, to me, is something that easily gets overlooked, but I think it's important from what I've seen in OTAs. They're emerging out of perhaps nowhere, or they're at least emerging because they're getting more and more comfortable taking on that role with somebody who hasn't necessarily been here for quite some time. That's a positive. And the other thing I'll say with respect to the linebacker group, the fact that Keenan Robinson has been working elsewhere also leads me to believe they're going to put the three best players on the field at the linebacker spot, which means if they have two players who have mainly played in the middle, but they think they can maximize their potential by moving one of the guys to the outside, it wouldn't surprise me if Robinson, let's say they feel very good about Brinkley. Brinkley plays middle. Robinson could be one of the outside linebackers that starts or gets the bulk of the reps. I would not dismiss that topic as well. I think that's an extreme possibility.
Yeah, also keep in mind, you know, Devon Kennard, he's got to stay healthy. So, you know, beyond just the competition issue that's going to be at hand, you know, you want as much depth out there. And I think you're right. I think, you know, barring health, that's definitely a possibility.
Well, that'll wrap things up for us here today. Certainly appreciate all the phone calls, all the tweets. Big Blue Kickoff Live with you each and every weekday starting at noon Eastern, as we will continue to field all of your calls and tweets, as well as continue to break down all that's happening with respect to the OTAs.
Are you back tomorrow?
Yes, I am back tomorrow.
Fantastic.
So with that being said, you can stay locked to Giants.com for Ben McAdoo's presser, as well as all the latest from the players. For Anita Marks, I'm Lance Meadow. We'll speak to you tomorrow right here on Giants.com.